Welcome, Adan and Felicia. Tell me, what's so special about Sam Sherlock?
Hi, good to be here. My name's Adan.
I'm Felicia.
And yeah, I think we've been writing Sherlock Sam now for
11 years. 12 years?
Already? Yeah, it's been
11,
a while.
12 years already? Yeah. Yeah.
This is so cute. You finish each other. You literally finish each other's sentences. Wow. Hello, and a very warm welcome to the Asian Bookshelf, where we explore Southeast Asia's literary landscape. If you are a discerning reader, perhaps even an aspiring writer, you are in exactly the right place. We interview acclaimed writers and key industry figures to explore Southeast Asia's literature. And today in this episode, episode 8, your podcast host, me, Devika Misra, will take a deep dive into literature for children, particularly mysteries for preteens, children aged about 7 to 11. In the studio with me are the husband-wife creative team behind AJ Lowe. Adan Jimenez and Felicia Lowe together have written about 18 books about Singapore's much-loved detective Sherlock Sam.
I think he's special to me because, like, when I was growing up in Singapore, a lot of the books I read were from, you know, the United States or from, like, the UK. And Sherlock Sam is one of the, I think, one of the first few local kid detectives who loves local food. He loves exploring, like, you know, places around Singapore. And he's just kind of fun and a nerdy kid.
Yeah. We put a lot of ourselves into him. So a lot of the stuff that he loves is stuff that we love, right? So he loves math and science and comic books, and we love math and science and comic books. Or sorry, maths.
you both love the same things?
A lot of times, yeah.
But Sherlock Sam actually has quite a lot of competition on the bookshelves. You know, I pop down to Kinokuniya, and the shelves are packed. There's Mr. Midnight, Little Hero, Amazing Ash, and Superhero, Daryl Limbs, Ace Agent, Spy Cat. So I was just wondering, how do you both account for this proliferation of characters? I mean, given how difficult it is for youngsters to actually read physical books now?
I think a lot of it is, sometimes it's by chance that a kid finds a book and they relate to it, right? And what happens is that for us, because we have a long-standing series, so they might pick up like book 4 and then they fall in love with the character, so they fall in love with like the plot, right? And then they continue reading the rest of the series. At least that's what we've heard from teachers and for parents. And I think the fact that there are so many strong, interesting characters on the bookshelves actually helps, because if a kid finishes reading our series, they can continue reading Darren's series, they can continue reading Amazing Ash. All these are like local books that didn't exist like, you know, 5-10 years ago. And it brings kids to the same places. They recognize the way the characters talk in the titles. And I think like they just enjoy reading all of them.
So it's good, yeah.
If you had to distill the essential elements that distinguish young adult, which is older fiction for older teens, from this type of writing for your age group, younger children, say 7 to 11 or 12?
I think like it reflects the kids themselves, right, at the different age groups. When you're 7 to 11 or 12, you are still in some ways dependent on your parents and the grown-up figures in their lives. So they will feature in the stories in a very different way from, let's say, a teenager or a young adult story, where there might be a bit more antagonism between the kid and the older kid and the parent. So in a way,
less rebelliousness.
They're not trying to shake off the parent.
Yeah. No, like in some ways, like because kids are so sophisticated nowadays, right? Like there is a little bit of push and pull, but it's more like, you know, the start of independence versus already being very independent and trying to pull away. I think it just reflects the kids themselves.
I think there's a lot more interiority in YA. A lot more about like what's going on internally. Like, not to say that there isn't any in middle grade, but there's a lot more in YA than in middle grade. So in middle grade, you'll have some interiority, the beginnings of that, but it's still a lot more sort of plot driven, a lot more adventure-y style storytelling, as opposed to, yeah, YA, where it tends to be a bit more like about what's going on internally, you know, the things that that the teen is going through and how they feel about it, and you know, those sorts of things. Yeah,
but I think when you talk to parents, it sounds like kids are getting more and more adult at a younger and younger age, and you know, this is also quite don't you see it as quite a sensitive age when children sort of develop a sense of themselves to some extent, and they become aware of social norms and prejudices and social exclusions. Do you have to think quite a lot about that? Do you research contemporary issues?
I think like both of us, because of the nature of our day jobs, right, these are all issues that we are quite aware of. Like, you know, we read on the news, we scroll on social media endlessly sometimes. But I think also because we've been writing for like 10 or 11 or 12 years already, right, we've also seen the way kids have grown up and have evolved. So like, writing for like a 10-year-old 10 years ago is very different from writing from a 10-year-old now. And I think we try and reflect that in the stories as the series progresses as well. So when we first started writing the first book, like Adan mentioned, it was very, very plot-driven. And by the time we reached book 18... Yeah, book 18. Yeah, it became about like, you know, one of the so-called bad guys in the earlier books. And then we kind of explore why she became a bully. It turned out that she was, you know, in the later story, she was bullied herself. And there was a lot more interiority in that way as well. But then we tried to keep the tone of the series consistent as well, because we can't suddenly be writing like a YA novel in the middle of like a series, right? So I think that's how we kind of reflect how kids are growing up and changing in a way that's very different from 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, our early books were also quite short. They were like
97 pages, yeah, I think.
Like,
yeah.
The first book was 97 pages.
And now?
And our latest book was 200 plus pages. Yeah. And that was with a slightly smaller font as well, because we'd written so much for this latest one. So like I think that has shown that, you know, like the books that we've written have grown in complexity because the children who are reading are also a bit more, you know, having more complex thoughts and you know, growing up in a more complex world, I guess. And so, yeah, I think that's how that reflects that, yeah.
So can we talk about this writing process? Because it must be very difficult for two people to be writing the same book. So how exactly do you start this? How do the ideas germinate?
It was a lot harder when we first started because we had to learn a lot of things. We had to learn, you know, these characters, of course, these kinds of stories. These are things that, you know, they were new to both of us. And then, of course, we had to learn how to work together because we'd never written together.
But we were just married too then, right?
Yes, actually. Yeah, we had just gotten married as well. So there was all that going on as well. So generally speaking, the way we do it is that we will sit down and sort of try to hash out the main, you know, arc of the story, the main plot points together. Discuss, you know, what characters might come, what the mystery, the main mystery is going to be, what characters we're going to use, if we're going to bring back any of the what we've been terming the irregulars. We have characters who will make appearances, not every book, but they'll show up once in a while. If we want to use any of them, who the, you know, basically like what the mystery is and what the ending is going to be, right? And then we'll sit together and sort of plot it out as well. Like this needs to happen in chapter one, this needs to happen in chapter two, so on and so forth until we've, you know, plotted out the whole book. But everything is, you know, a paragraph, right? Like every chapter is just a paragraph. Like this has to happen in this book, in this chapter. And then we will separate. Usually Felicia will start the books. So she will write the first two or three chapters. When she is tired or when she decides she's done, she'll come and tag me in and I'll write the next couple of chapters. And we'll just keep tag teaming until we finish the book. And then we'll go back and we'll take turns editing the full book. So again, usually Felicia will do the first pass at editing and then I'll take the second pass. And then we'll, if we need to, we'll do a third or a fourth before sending it to our editor, who will then tell us all the horrible things we've done, all the bad things we've done, and everything that we need to change that we thought was perfectly fine.
I think when we first started, our editor could tell who wrote which chapter. Yeah. And then by now, they can't quite tell. Sometimes we slip up and Adan uses American spelling. Yeah. And that's
that always
how they
gives
can
me
tell.
Away, yeah.
Yeah, but now I think they can't tell already.
Yeah, our voice has gotten, like, on Sherlock Sam, our voice has gotten quite similar, and we've both been writing because all the books are from Sherlock's perspective, so we've gotten very good at writing Sherlock's voice, and we're both great at it, and no one can tell who it is unless I forget a U in favorite or something. Yeah,
Felicia, he's making it all sound very smooth. Please tell me, is it all agreements? Usually, is there some disagreement here in this process at all?
Yeah, I mean, there's always, like, you know, there's always different opinions sometimes. But the plot, usually, we don't change a lot from once we planned it out. And if we do change, it's always a discussion before we make the change. And I think we've gotten quite good at that over the 10 years. I think, like, the disagreements might come up with maybe, like, you know, the dialogue, maybe how a character speaks. I'll be like, this character sounds too American. And he's like, no, it isn't. And things like that. But I feel like the
process... One time you wouldn't let me use the word... comestibles.
Oh, yeah.
I wrote down comestibles and she said, no kid will know what that means. And I said, then they'll just look it up. And I was not allowed to use the word.
Please tell us, what does it mean?
It just means eat. It's food. It's things that you can eat. Comestibles. Yeah.
Oh, consumables.
Yeah, well, that's another word for it. Sure.
Oh.
Yeah.
See?
We are very British.
All right, fine.
In Singapore. We have been a British colony.
But I think, like... especially with, like, the last few years, there's not been a lot of, like, disagreements or conflict. We thought that it would be very challenging for us to write during the COVID period, especially when it was, like, under lockdown, right? But I think it was actually a way for us to like, escape a little bit and write the stories.
Yeah, I think it was even easier because we had no outside distractions. Mm. Yeah, I admit that early days or the earlier books, I would get, me more than Felicia, I would get very frustrated about something or another, and it would lead to a fight because I couldn't control my temper. But over the years, that doesn't happen anymore. It's a stop because I've learned how to communicate. I've learned how to talk about these things, and I've learned how to, you know, make my case and then try to convince, but also listen when Felicia needs to be trying to convince me, and listen and understand where she's coming from, and so I think that ultimately makes all the stories stronger. And you know, it's like, I think a lot of people will ask, like, well, if it's just a compromise all the time, then it's not going to be a good story because we're both compromising our visions, quote unquote, right? And it's just going to make for a bad story. But I think that's not what's been happening. What's happening is that we will both argue our cases to each other, and then we will choose one of them. We will decide, actually, I will tell Felicia, actually, that is a better idea than what I had. Let's go with that one. Or Felicia will say, actually, that's a better idea than I had, and let's go with that one. And then we stick to that vision. It's awesome to have a writing partner because we're constantly just sort of like bouncing ideas off each other. And the idea generally... It doesn't always happen this way, but generally speaking, it tends to just get better because it snowballs. Like Felicia will say something and then I'll add to it and then she'll add to it and then I'll add to what she added. And then it just becomes this amazing thing that wouldn't have existed if it was just me or if it was just her.
Yeah, we're writing a new series right now. I think that's where more disagreements come in because we've learned to write from one particular voice for so long, and then now we have to get to know new characters.
New voices.
Yeah, new voices. The plot is all over the place. But I think because we figured out how to communicate, like, you know, with the initial, like, Sherlock Sam books, right? Like, it's not a big issue nowadays, I don't think.
No.
Yeah.
You mentioned your day job. Is that your new publishing venture?
Yeah, we've been around.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I run Difference Engine and we've been around since 2018. We published our first book in 2020, right when literally the entire world shut down. So it's been a very exciting 6 years. And we're an independent publishing house based in Singapore. We work primarily with Southeast Asian creators. We have about, I want to say, 15 or 16 books right now. And this year, we finally got international distribution. So you'll be able to see Southeast Asian titles travel the world, hopefully.
Is it all children's books?
No, it's children's, young adult, and adult titles as well, but all comics and graphic novels.
And what was the motivation? Did you feel there weren't enough publishing houses in the region? Or was it for this particular genre of graphic novels and comics?
I think like comics and graphic novels, the industry has always been quite male-dominated. And I think like, I didn't think like there wasn't enough local publishing houses or people publishing comics, but more like there wasn't a lot of titles that I was interested in reading from a perspective that was quite unique from Western publishing. So like, you know, like it was just a great opportunity to try and get new writers and illustrators to write about topics that are meaningful to us in Southeast Asia. So, you know, we've tackled topics like having your period, conversations about mental health, pregnancy loss, intergenerational families and dementia. I think it's just been like a wonderful experience.
Wow. Yeah, much needed, I would think. So, Felicia, for the non-initiated, what is the difference between graphic novels and comics?
I think this will be what starts an argument between us and many, many other people. I would say that you can actually use them interchangeably.
That's correct.
Yeah. But I think the way like marketing...
Not an argument.
Yeah. I mean, I actually agree with him, right? Like, right. I would use comic and graphic novel interchangeably, but I also realized that in terms of like sometimes for marketing purposes or for clarity purposes, for people who are not quite sure about the medium, right? Comics can refer to like shorter single issues that are sometimes published by like the, what are they called? The corporate publishers?
Corporate publishers.
Corporate superhero publishers. Yeah. So like, you know, the ones that come out every month or every week and it consolidates into what they call a graphic novel. A graphic novel can also refer to like an independently published standalone. So that's the way like the market has differentiated them. But I think that they can and they should be used interchangeably.
I think like comics is the term. Like that is the medium that we are, that is being used as comics. But I think graphic novel came up as a marketing term in the 80s when comics were trying to be more, to try to be taken more seriously. So if longer books are called novels, let's call these graphic novels because they've got pictures in them, right? So that's where that term came from. But nowadays, like, it irks me because they try to sort of separate them and say like, oh, these are comics, right? These sort of the superhero stuff that, you know, all the MCU movies are based on, that's comics. Graphic novels are more serious matters. They deal with more serious things. And that's not true. They're both comics, and graphic novels are just a marketing term.
Right. So one of the things you said is one of the best things about this job is that you do a lot of writing workshops and you go to schools. So what do the kids ask you? What's like their favorite questions?
Oh man, we have a lot of questions are about like, you know, about the books and about, you know, how we write together. That's a favorite of theirs is to ask. But then also they get very curious about our relationship. So they'll be like, you know, a lot of times I ask, you know, are you married? Are you together? How did you meet? Right. And then I think one time, which it really kind of made me feel really sad, was when one child asked if Felicia was my daughter.
Oh.
And I was like, how old do I look? that is a question you needed to ask. So yeah, that one broke my heart.
I think sometimes like
made you proud. Say honestly.
I think like a dance, right? Like a lot of times the kids, they really want to know which book is our favorite. And it's always really, really hard. And I think the ones that when kids tell us like, you know, oh, they want to write because they read our books, those are always like the special ones. And I think a lot of kids,
my favorites are when kids tell us that like, or their parents will tell us that like, they didn't used to read. They didn't like reading. They didn't find nothing. They couldn't get, you know, interested in any book. But then they found Sherlock Sam, or Sherlock Sam was put in front of them, and they started to read that, and that got them into reading. And because of that book, that's when I feel really good. That's my favorite comment to get, is when a kid tells me or their parents tell me that they started reading because of Sherlock Sam, and from Sherlock Sam they went to obviously other books, which is great. Like they went to other things and they found other things that were like Sherlock Sam and that weren't like Sherlock Sam, but they still enjoyed it. And that's Yeah, like it's that's my favorite thing.
Sherlock Sam has solved mysteries in Singapore and he's gone beyond, right? In Singapore, he's been at Fort Canning, he's been in Katong, he's done stuff in London, New York, Seoul, Taipei. So now what's left?
Alternate universes.
That's right, alternate universes. So we did, earlier, one of our books that we did was called Sherlock Sam's Orange Shorts.
Sherlock Sam's Orange Shorts.
Yes. Yeah. And it's a collection of short stories that are... that take place in alternate universes. So we still use our same characters, Sherlock and Wendy and Watson and all of them, but they're slightly different versions of them. So one of the stories, for example, was Sherlock as a superhero. So instead of being, you know, he's generally called Singapore's greatest kid detective. So instead of being that, in this story, he was the superhero known as Chicken Wing. So Chicken Wing was his superhero name, and he dressed up in a Chicken Wing outfit, and he went out and fought crime. So we did a lot of stories like that. And so we're going to do a sequel to that of sorts. So a second collection of short stories featuring our characters in different situations, in situations that they wouldn't normally be in, because that's not the kind of stories Sherlock Sam usually is.
We hope that you have enjoyed this episode of The Asian Bookshelf and have learned about our young literary superheroes and the magic books bring to preteens. I'm your host, Devika Misra. Do join us for our next exciting, possibly controversial conversation. Coming up is a sizzling sensation of a book. Yes, it's true. People, I do not use the words lightly. As a former journalist here myself, I look forward to discussing Dirty Old Media Men. The author has chosen to use the pseudonym Millie Lee to write a fictional memoir of her time as an online radio and TV journalist. We'd love to hear from you about this or any of our episodes at contact@theasianbookshelf.com or in the show notes below. Please follow or subscribe to The Asian Bookshelf on your favorite podcast platforms, and you can also find us on Instagram, Facebook, and X. Many thanks for listening to The Asian Bookshelf, home to words and voices in Asia today.